The explosion was not intended to devastate like the bombs in the bank, but just to kill whoever was in the house, and Sabina's precision had succeeded. Inside, the two agents and the handcuffed man were killed instantly. This bomb had a different purpose. It, too, carried a message, but it wasn't a message for the people of America. It wasn't a message to be shown all over cable TV and news stations across the globe. No, this message was just as direct, but more personal. It was for whoever walked in that room, if anyone did. It was for whoever was trying to catch Sabina, and it was her way of saying, back off. And although he wouldn't admit it out loud, Jack got the message, loud and clear. Within minutes, backup had arrived, but it was too late. Medics ran to the house, but Jack knew the men were dead, and that there was nothing that could be done for them now. As he sat on the hood of one of the patrol cars that had pulled up, he took out his cell and called Roy. Roy, she's not here. There's nothing here. Jack's voice carried the same beaten-down tone it had in Switzerland when Roy had spoken to him after the assault on Suleiman's villa. And Roy, two of Spelling's men are dead, too. She'd rigged the house with explosives. Roy said he would inform Spelling, but that he was probably on his way already. Jack spoke gruffly into his phone. Tell me there's some developments at the bank. We need some good news here. Well, the FBI here are working on it, and Homeland Security are on their way. But it looks the same as Washington, Jack. The blast came from inside, on the lower level, and tore right through the building. It's exactly the same. She's planting the bomb in the safety deposit boxes. Tell them we need a list of all the... But Roy cut him short. I already have, Jack. They're compiling it now. FBI agent Ted Newman's in charge on the ground and has his men putting together a list of all the owners of the deposit boxes as we speak. Okay. Now call this Newman guy and tell him I want him to meet me at the precinct in half an hour. If that's how she's doing it, then her name's going to be on one of those lists. If we can find a match between here and Washington, we'll know what alias, if any, she's using, Roy. Okay. Just get yourself back and I'll call Newman, all right, Jack? But Jack had already hung up. He grabbed one of the patrol officers and told him to drive him back to the precinct. As the car sped off from the house, Jack felt like he was getting further away from Sabina. Each yard along the road was a mile between where they were and catching her, and the gulf was widening. She had anticipated every move they'd made, and she obviously knew that they'd be onto her. But what Jack realized now was that she had known this would happen all along. She knew they would find the house, or at least she'd planned in case they did. But if she'd planned for that, what else had she planned for? Had she anticipated them following the deposit boxes? Jack thought it was now a certainty, but he had to try. But what really frightened him now, and what was chiefly responsible for the defeatist tone in his voice, was that if she had planned this, he knew she'd be far away by now. If her whole mission had been planned, anticipating their pursuit, then she would have planned an escape route, too. She was loyal to Suleiman, but she wouldn't die for him. She wanted out at the end. Roy suspected she'd run, fearing her cover had been blown. But Jack didn't agree. She'd thought of everything that happened. She hadn't wanted them to walk into that house, but if they did, she'd ensured she was ready. She wasn't going to leave the country, as Spelling now thought. No, she was going to complete her mission, even if only to keep Suleiman from her, and that was what gave Jack an idea. Sabina had no way of knowing Suleiman was dead. It was the only advantage they had left. Roy was waiting at the precinct when Jack entered the office. Jack knew what he had to do, and he picked up the nearest phone and called Langley. It was time to raid the TMI offices in New York. Sure, it was risky doing so, and word would definitely get back to Sabina that they'd been there. But if they could find out where she was going, they could take the fight to her, rather than waiting for her to strike. Hanging up the phone after the order had been given, Jack turned to Wise. My guys are going to raid the TMI offices first thing in the morning. See if they can't find out where Sabina is headed. She's done the East Coast, so my guess is she's off west, L.A. or Vegas. Yeah, Schmidt has emailed a photograph of her taken at a casino in Monte Carlo. Apparently she loves to gamble, Jack. Really? He deadpanned. Well, her fucking luck is about to run out. Chapter 22. As the hours ticked by, Sabina drew closer to achieving her goal. Each second that passed, she counted the numbers that would be killed by her precisely placed explosions of hatred. She sat in a wide first-class seat, enjoying a glass of fine champagne, with chili garlic prawns and mussels, and paid not the slightest bit of attention to the chaos she had left in her wake. She knew the bombs would have detonated, but she seemed unconcerned with the fact, more preoccupied with the hors d'oeuvre laid out in front of her and getting the attendant's attention than anything else. The aircraft was cruising comfortably in a small headwind, and they were somewhere over Texas or Arizona. Sabina couldn't tell. It had just been announced that they'd be landing in a little over 2 hours at LAX. On arrival, anxious that she could have been identified and that government agents would be waiting, she walked slowly to the airport exit, her eyes scanning the multitude of crisscrossing people for any threats. At the terminal entrance were a group of what Sabina assumed were policemen, harassing a young Asian man outside who had made the cataclysmic error of parking his car momentarily in a no-stop zone to drop off his wife. As they pushed and harangued the young man, studying in great detail his wife's ticket as if it concealed some divine secret, she could tell the nature of their game. He shouldn't have stopped, but it wasn't the position of his car, or indeed the color of his car, that had singled him out in their eyes. More the color of his skin that had stolen their unwanted attention. As Sabina edged towards the large glass doors, she strained to overhear their conversation. But all she could make out were the muted sounds of frustration and the futile calls to calm down as the volume of the men's voices escalated amidst the ever-shortening patience of the controlling officers. But it meant she was free. And as she walked through the automatic doorway, she glanced over and exchanged a moment's look with the beleaguered man, sharing an understanding of his frustrations and anger in 2 seconds of eye contact. Then she looked back, walked to the side of the road, and hailed a cab. She got in, and the cab drove off. The driver was chewing on the end of a cigar, and the interior of the cab reeked of tobacco smoke as he drove out of the airport and joined the freeway traffic. "You here on business or holiday?" the driver asked.
"Business," Sabina replied, winding down the window. "And can you put that cigar out? I can't stand the smell of tobacco, especially cigars."
She spoke in an authoritative manner, and the tone of her voice sounded like an order that was not up for discussion. The driver looked at her in the rearview mirror and then stubbed it out in the ashtray in front of him. She took a file from her bag and began reading it, and it was obvious to the driver that she did not want to talk. And they drove the 40 minutes from the airport to West Hollywood in silence. Sabina was focused on the document she was holding, and the driver nodded along, listening to 93 KHJ radio station. And he only spoke up again when they'd reached the destination.
"That's $42, lady," said the driver.
Sabina took out some money from her bag and paid him, including a small tip, and then got out of the cab. She'd asked the driver to drop her off at a bar on Sunset Strip, and he just about managed to do so, dropping her randomly towards the eastern end of the strip on the corner with Marmont Lane. She looked around. The Hollywood sign, in all its glory, stood propped up clear to all. And although it was early evening, the sun was already beginning to set over the Hollywood hills, and she could see the smog which hung low over the city. It was a pungent gray color, and it shrouded the city and tainted the sunlight that broke through. The sidewalk was empty, save for a few solitary individuals, but the street was not, with a constant flow of cars, mainly in the direction of Santa Monica. It was a foreign way to live for her, such a reliance on cars. In Europe, people walked more and traveled on trains and buses. But in L.A., the car reigned supreme. almost as if the city had been created in direct collusion with the automobile industry. Sabina instantly understood the Americans' need for and dependency on oil. She walked up to a bar called The Late Room and walked in. It was a gay bar, with few house rules, that sat in the middle of one of the seedier lengths of the strip. On one side was another bar, which had been closed down for some time, and on its other side, a bar and grill, which, although it was open, looked from the outside, to all intents and purposes, as if it had followed the same path as its neighbor, two numbers down. Inside the Late Room, the lighting was soft and dimmed, and the room was filled with a handful of hushed conversations that seemed to quieten even further with her entrance. She walked up to the bar, stepping past a couple of men who were dancing in the center of the small dance floor. A young man sat in the corner of the bar, raised up a foot or so on a small stage, and he was playing a baby grand piano, on top of which stood a glass stuffed with numerous dollar bills given by customers. The music drifted softly as he struck the keys tenderly, and it filled the room with the swirling sounds of Cole Porter and Johnny Mercer's music. He was a very talented jazz pianist, and he was totally engrossed in the music he was playing. She walked up to the bar and sat down. Seated at the bar were two young men, both dressed in tightly fitted jeans and almost identical shirts, which looked under threat of being overcome by their swirling patterns and wide collars. They were locked in a conversation and seemed unaware of anything that was going on around them, and it was obvious they were only interested in one another. Sabina put her bag down on the bar, and the bartender walked over to her. "Hi, what can I get you?" he asked.
"Canadian Club and 7-Up on the rocks in a tall glass."
"You got it. 1cc 7 on the rocks and a highball glass coming up." As Sabina waited for the drink, the two men who'd been occupying the seats next to her suddenly got up and left, still locked in discussion about whatever it was they were talking about that seemed to distract them from the world around them. As they walked to the door, it opened, and a young woman walked in, but they barely noticed her and walked straight past, almost knocking her over.
"Hey, you want to watch where you're going? Goddamn!"
The men momentarily glanced back, but then left, muttering something to each other. The lady watched them leave, and then walked up to the bar and ordered a beer. A Miller, she stressed. Nothing imported. Sabina sat sipping her CC7 and watched the lady as she sat down. She looked on intently as she swigged from the frothy bottle and played with the chain around her neck, pulling it slowly on its left-hand side so it rolled over her skin and moved in a kind of loop. The small metal clasp, which had started at the back, moved round under her ear and over the top of her chest before returning to its position at the back where it had begun. She looked over and saw Sabina sitting watching her.
"What are you looking at, lady?"
Sabina smiled and looked down at the bar, as if suddenly developing a coyness she didn't know she had.
"Look, I'm sorry," the lady offered. "I didn't mean to... It's just those fucking guys. You know, who do they think they are?" "I don't think they meant anything by it. They just weren't paying any attention." "You're from out of town, aren't you?"
Sabina balked at what she thought would have been fairly obvious, but smiled and replied,
"Yeah, I am." "Well, you'd better watch yourself. That's a problem in this town. No manners. Nobody cares about anyone else. Nobody sees, you know? They just do their own thing and damn everyone else."
"Well, not everyone's like that,"
Sabina replied timidly, finishing her drink and putting the empty glass back on the table. The lady laughed.
"Look, I'm sorry. How rude am I? Can I buy you a drink?"
"Why not?"
"Bartender, another Miller and a CC7,
Sabina said.
"On the rocks,"
she added hastily.
"I'm Jackie McDonald,"
Sabina introduced herself.
"Jane Beckett? What, are you British or Australian or something?"
Sabina laughed.
"Yeah, something like that."
The bartender put down their drinks, and Jackie took a long swig, wiping her mouth after and putting a $20 bill down on the bar.
"Well, Miss Jane Beckett, I haven't seen you in here before."
Sabina smiled, but avoided the question.
"And you come in here quite a lot, then, I take it?" Not a lot, no, but sometimes.
Jackie tilted her head and looked at Sabina, noticing her travel bag on the floor.
You going somewhere tonight, then?
She asked, nodding at the bag by her feet.
No, I just got into town this evening. Right. Where you been, then? San Diego. What's in San Diego? You sure ask a lot of questions, don't you? I was visiting family. Sorry. I guess I do talk a lot sometimes. But you don't mind, do you? You see, I'm from out of town, too. It makes you stand out too much in this town.
And Sabina could tell for the first time a hint of an accent, buried somewhere under the years of dilution in L.A. Sabina looked interested.
Where are you from, then? Austin, Texas. Originally.
She laughed.
You mean you can't tell?
They continued to talk, and Sabina told Jackie about her mother, talking at great length considering the two women had just met. But she carefully avoided talking about too much of her past, not giving away where she was from or any of her history. But Jackie didn't seem to mind. Sabina's elusive responses and air of mystery intrigued her, and they talked over several more drinks until well after 11.
So what are you doing for the rest of the evening?
Jackie asked. Sabina replied that she'd been supposed to meet a friend of hers at the bar, but that it seemed most likely she wasn't going to turn up.
Some friend of yours decided not to show up like that. Yes, well, she's a flight attendant, so she most probably just got held up and delayed somewhere. Anyway, it hasn't all turned out bad, though.
Sabina smirked and smiled seductively at Jackie over the top of her glass.
No, I guess it hasn't. Well, are you hungry? Because I was thinking there's a fantastic Chinese place just next to my apartment. We could go and get some food and take it back to mine. That sounds good to me.
Sabina smiled, but her eyes didn't seem to match the emotions her mouth was portraying. They were watching Jackie, but with a hidden agenda, as if Sabina had something else in mind and was going along with it.
Anyway, it doesn't look like my friend is going to turn up now. Well, let's drink up then.
Sabina and Jackie finished their drinks, Sabina tipping the CC7 back in one go, and then they left the bar and walked out into the parking lot. The sun had set, but the sky was bright, illuminated with the neon lights of the city, which seemed to be reflected back. As they walked through the empty lot towards Jackie's car, Sabina watched her new companion, carefully studying her movements as she stepped into the front seat, and it was obvious that she'd had a few drinks. It was a Pontiac Firebird, and was littered with rubbish, and CDs were spread out all over the front. Sabina threw her bag on the back seat and climbed into the passenger seat. Jackie drove down Sunset Boulevard, which was still busy with flowing traffic despite the late hour. The beer had obviously had a little effect on her as she cruised along Sunset, heading west. West Hollywood was straight ahead, and over the lights, the rich and powerful of Beverly Hills. The iconic Hollywood sign loomed out of the murky L.A. night sky, standing proudly on the side of the Valley Hills. She turned right into North Highland Avenue, and then a couple of minutes later, right again into Franklin, where she skidded to an abrupt halt.
I've just got to dump some stuff upstairs first. Come on,
Jackie said excitedly. Sabina got out of the car and followed Jackie up the stairs to her apartment. It was an old building and looked more like a motel than an apartment complex. The doorways were spread along the corridor and overlooked the parking lot, spread out as if there couldn't be more than a couple of rooms behind each one. Jackie's was on the first floor and around the back, looking up towards the Hollywood Hills. She opened the door and let Sabina in first, and then followed herself, turning on the lights as she did.
Can I get you a drink? Sure,
Sabina replied.
Is beer okay? Whatever you've got.
Sabina could hear Jackie fumbling around in the kitchen and the clatter of glasses and the clunk of the fridge door as it swung closed. She returned with two beers in her right hand and a couple of small shot glasses in the other. A small whiskey bottle was tucked under her arm.
You can't have a chaser without the shot, right?
Sabina laughed.
Well, I guess not.
Jackie poured the whiskey out into the two glasses and passed one to Sabina, and then sat down.
Here's to chance encounters,
she said, raising her glass.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Chance encounters,
Sabina replied, and then she knocked it back and won. Jackie did the same, and her eyes remained fixed on Sabina as she did so.
Well, you just make yourself at home. I'm going to go and see about some food.
Jackie went into the next room, and Sabina could hear as she picked up the phone and dialed the restaurant. She ordered the food and spoke in fluent Cantonese to the restaurant on the other end of the line, which surprised Sabina. She was obviously a more educated woman than she'd supposed, and Sabina realized she was not the only one who'd been concealing parts about themselves.
It'll be about half an hour. They bring it round, too. So, how is it you come to speak Chinese, then? You didn't mention that earlier. Well, I think you'll find there are lots of things I didn't say earlier. Like there are lots of things you didn't talk about.
Sabina smiled, and Jackie poured another drink for them both. Sabina knocked it back again, and they managed another three drinks. But by the time their food arrived, they'd lost all interest and had only a desire for one another. Jackie stepped in towards her and put her arm around her. She looked directly into Sabina's eyes and got the response she'd hoped for. She leaned in and kissed Sabina on the lips. Sabina paused for a moment, but then kissed her back, wrapping her arms passionately around Jackie's waist and up under her blouse as they embraced each other. Jackie kissed Sabina again, and their arms intertwined around each other.
Not in here. Come with me.
Jackie led Sabina into her bedroom, where they lay down on the large king-size bed, and Jackie undid the buttons on Sabina's blouse as she lay down next to her, passionately undressing one another and losing themselves in the heat of the moment which engulfed them. Jackie was the first to wake the following morning. Sliding quietly out of the bed, she went into the bathroom and showered. She then dried herself and got dressed quickly, pulling on her nursing uniform and a dark blue pullover on top, which she zipped up. She went into the kitchen and made herself some breakfast. Sabina was still asleep in the bedroom. Jackie returned, carrying a cup of coffee.
Jane, wake up.
And she rubbed Sabina's shoulders gently in an attempt to wake her.
Here's some coffee. Listen, I have to go to work in a few minutes, but you're welcome to stay here. I get off at 2. Maybe we can meet then?
Sabina sat up and took the cup.
What time is it now? It's a little after 5. Sorry,
Jackie said as she bent down and kissed Sabina.
Thanks. I'll be waiting for you, so don't be late.
Sabina sat up and smiled, the first honest smile she had managed, as if she had not woken fully and had unintentionally let a genuine emotion out before her usual protective shield went up. Jackie smiled back and leaned in and kissed her again.
I'll try. Don't you worry.
She stood up and picked up her bag, which was sitting on the chair, and turned affectionately to Sabina, who was still in the bed.
Who's Suleiman?
She asked casually.
Who? Suleiman. You called out the name Suleiman several times in your sleep. I thought you were having a nightmare. See some ex who's hassling you or something?
Suddenly, Sabina was awake. She had not given away any details about herself the night before, and Jackie really had no idea who she was. But in her sleep, she'd given away the most vital thing possible. It was only one word, but that word had too many implications, and she couldn't take it back now. She reached over, put the cup down on the bedside table, and got out of the bed without bothering to put any clothes on. She picked up her bag and walked to the bathroom.
Listen, can you wait a minute? I need to go to the bathroom. Don't go just yet. All right, but don't be long. My shift starts at 6,
Jackie said as she sat down on the edge of the bed. Sabina walked into the bathroom and took the small handgun from her bag, which fit snugly into her palm. She then pulled out the silencer and screwed it onto the end of the barrel, draped a towel over it, and walked back out into the bedroom.
Do you know where I put the car keys last night? I can't seem to find them.
Sabina told Jackie she could see them on the floor under the table, and she went over and picked them up, walked over to Jackie, and handed them to her.
Thanks. I'm forever losing these damn things.
Sabina sat down on the bed next to her and kissed her. She raised the gun in her hand slowly so that Jackie didn't notice and held it close to her chest. She then leaned back and looked Jackie in the eyes. Jackie smiled and looked back at Sabina, and for a moment the two women shared a moment of silent intimacy. But it was not to last. Sabina smiled back and then pulled the trigger quickly. She fired two shots into Jackie from no more than a foot away, which killed her instantly. Her body barely moved as the bullets tore through her chest, piercing her heart, and she fell backwards onto the bed. A large red circlet appeared on the front of her top as the blood oozed out of the two small wounds on her front, both no wider than half an inch across, and it started to pool onto the sheets beneath. Sabina took the gun out from under the towel and placed it on the table and then reached down for Jackie's bag and emptied out its contents onto the bed. As she did so, a solitary tear ran across her cheek. She hadn't wanted to pull the trigger this time, but she'd had no choice. Unwittingly, Jackie had heard too much and had sealed her own fate. Keys and a lighter and a half-empty pack of cigarettes fell out onto the covers, and Sabina rifled through the mass of objects, looking for the one thing that she wanted. In the middle of the pile of Jackie's belongings was her purse, and Sabina opened it immediately. She took out her social security card and put the bag back down, taking great care to put everything back inside except for the keys. She got up, got dressed, and left the apartment quickly and quietly. Outside, the sun was rising over the hills, and the city was lurching back into life. The roads were filling up, and the odd apartment light began to flick on as people began to get up. Sabina looked around. Jackie's car sat in the parking lot. She walked down the steps and over to it and took out the keys. She unlocked the door, and it swung open, its well-worn hinges unable to hold the weight of the door, and Sabina got in. She pulled out of the lot and onto the road and drove towards the strip where she parked the car up. As a single woman on the strip at that time in the morning, she couldn't have stood out any more. But she walked down the street several blocks anyway, and then threw the keys into a dumpster and hailed a cab. Almost immediately, one pulled up and Sabina got in. The driver was a large Mexican man who seemed to have not fully woken yet, as he couldn't stop yawning, his mouth opening wide as he did so, bearing a mouthful of fillings. Sabina gave him an address that was a couple of blocks from her safe house, east of Santa Monica. As they rolled along the strip, the sun now blaring across the cloudless Los Angelino morning, her thoughts turned to Jackie, and she felt a tinge of sadness. The bombs had not concerned her, and she'd not seen their impact herself. But this had been different, and for the first time since she'd landed in America, she felt something, and she didn't know why. The cab pulled up, and for a moment, Sabina didn't move. Consumed by her thoughts, she hadn't noticed where they were. She paid the driver, who managed to take her money without even so much as turning around or shifting in his seat, and then she got out. Her feeling was familiar, but she didn't know why. But as she was walking along the road, she suddenly realized. It wasn't a new feeling, and she had felt like that before. But not for a long time. In fact, it had been almost 20 years since she'd last felt like that. And she knew quite clearly when that last time was. She'd been living in Switzerland back then, and she was only a child, several years shy of reaching the yardstick of double figures. But the last time, and indeed the first time she'd felt such remorse and conflict and pain, was when her mother had died. End of Disc 5.